if you wanted, if anybody ever read the paper that I wrote on this, that I did a 1 week quick trip to Russell, and I numbered them, I ranked them. What John wants to emphasize is that you really can't number them. I numbered them from 1 to 18, as Armstrong did in his book, to verify. And John, for reasons of what you learn after being there for 2 years, realizes that you can't just pinpoint a number on these, a rank on these.
The thing is that if you use numbers, then you're immediately onto the track that, because they use them in series, and they use sometimes a progression of shells. One person getting a shell and giving another one, higher one to another one, and this one's keeping this and giving on a higher one against another one. So there is something about that you sort of progress through this ladder of rank. But if you use numbers, then you get into the idea that you have to go from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4, and you don't understand that it's possible to skip some of them, and it's more complex than this simple track. And I use, when I when we go into this this thing about the how they do the mechanisms of exchange, when I talk about the shells they use, I use symbols like A, D, and C, or M, N, and L. But the Russell people, they can't do that, of course. They have not developed any abstract system of talking about this. So what they do concrete signs. They use the actual dark names for explaining in the abstract what they're doing. And then you get confused. I don't know if you can understand.
Do you explain how they actually count, apart from that?
Yeah, they have a very straightforward counting system, decimal system, and they go up into the thousands very easily.
Base 10, is it?
Yeah.
That's a based on the curve, isn't it? The curve.
Yeah. I cannot go into how the different payments are organized. That's too complicated. I think we should go on to page 24 and talk about procedures of exchange. And maybe I should start to read the thing.
No.
Sorry. The thing is that I thought that this stuff would be very marginal to the conference. So when I heard about this thing, the conference, I started to think about making some general thing, and I made this paper for you. I had on Monday. So it's a bit time since I've been into this stuff, and it's very difficult to be on top of the system all the time. Understandably, I better read it. Okay, procedures of exchange. The role of high rank in debt is nowadays symbolic. They only enter pro forma into exchange. The effect of their participation is public validation of bribe wells and other transactions. To the minority who controls them, this means some social influence and the benefit of the food given when they are used. But actual exchange is by means of lower rank in debt. The curve system is more open at the top, but access to a high rank curve is limited. There are always some of the higher rank transferred in a peak payment that return to their owners again. So they go and they come back again. So often the big men are able to eat the cake and still have it. They get their money's worth of pork without really spending it. Maybe this is a very vulgar way of But still a prospect is open that it lures a man to rise in his relation to the hierarchy of values, to extend his sphere of operation towards the exclusive upper ranks of Ndap and Kerr. The ladder of shell ranks constitute a path which step by step leads from the low sphere of small Ndap and Kerr at the bottom towards the realm of the glorious valuables at the top.
They call it a path?
No, that's my question. The fundamentals of shell finance is concerned with movements on this ladder of rank. Young men make money, they earn money doing piecework or building houses. Services rendered to kin or big men may be rewarded with the gift of a minor part of the pig to exchange at a pig feast. After marriage, a man may himself raise pigs or contract to exchange the crop of a garden. The greater part of the shell money in a payment of redistributed to him debtors, is it debtors or debtors?
Debtors.
Debtors, and people who have to provide the food for the shell contributors. From the highest ranking duck and curve actually transferred in the payment, and part of the lower ranked ones are kept by the main recipient. He may stake those in shell finance by entrusting them to men who seek him to support payments they are going to undertake. For those who already possess high rank valuables, it's a quite simple affair to borrow another one, another valuable. Now I'm moving into the first sort of mechanism of exchange I'm talking about, and that is security. It's a custom that no man should use his own high ranking duck. The chairman duke that crowns the payment of pig and the bride wealth should come from outside the locality. Loans of high ranking duck are therefore frequently arranged. When a payment of cur is made, the recipient is shown a selection of cur to choose from for each of the leading high ranked cur on the road. I haven't told you that and on ceremonial occasions if you have a cur, it's a string with 10 discs on. At feasts, they used to take them off the string and put them together on a very long string. So you have a tapering string with small low ranker at one end and the big ones, high ranker, at the other end. So maybe the payment for the main part of a pig, you would have about 35 units altogether. A unit that would be 10. So that's what I talk about when I talk about a rope. Yeah, so the big cur must be borrowed too. In such cases, security is provided. The security for cur of high rank is usually a cur of lower rank together with a necklace or ceremonial axe blade to make up for the difference in value between the two cur, the lower rank one and the big one. For big and duck, the security used to be another duck of high rank. I'm a bit unsure of this because I have examples both of a higher rank duck paid and also for a somewhat lower rank. Valuable use as security are team duck, ticker, etc. T means to undo, unfasten. So you unfasten a thing by giving security.
Like a basset, is it?
Like a basset?
No, I wouldn't exactly call it.
No. Somewhat like a basset.
Not
but
like a basset.
We've got a notion of a difference in value, which hasn't appeared in any of the descriptions before.
No, I use the word value. Maybe we should be more, reserved. Don't use that word and talk about rank. It seems to me that I sometimes had to use the word value. I'm not too hard on that. Security is used in cases where the owners of valuables are not directly involved as supporters or contributors to a payment. When people accept to commit themselves more heavily to a transaction, they stake their shells in chains or mobilization. This is a very central thing in my paper, this about how they mobilize the big hiring in Darfur. The basic mechanism at work is a form of unbalanced exchange. A, you can look at the diagram here. A releases the shell or rank N from B by the deposit with D, B of a shell of lower rank of M. So you see A has M and he gives it to B, and B gives the bigger shell back, N back to A. The implication is that sometime in the future, the reverse transaction will take place so that the balance is restored. So sometime later, B will give M the shell of rank M back to A, and A he will pass the big shell of rank A into B again. Is that all right? Is that clear?
So what's A's top rank? Is that the bottom rank? How are you ranking these shells?
Oh, they're just
it doesn't matter. Yeah. Okay.
Could be there and there. Maybe there and there.
Yeah.
This could be M and this could be N. No, this could be M and this M.
But here N is greater than M.
Oh, sorry. I mixed it up. M is low, course, and I just like the equity. M is, it comes
okay.
first, and N comes after. So N is a bigger one.
Right.
N is bigger.
Right.
When I show these things, I mean the arrows, the lowest arrow, that's the lower ring, and the highest, I mean, on top of the
yeah,
paper, that's
I
the higher ring.
I
okay, A and B, they're the person's group transaction. Here the transaction is of the restrictive kind, delayed reciprocity between two parties. But the mechanism may also lead to more generalized sequences linking chains of shell possessors. Chains of this kind are formed in the mobilization of big shells for pig feed. I should maybe do this on the on the board. Okay. A whole pig, they usually only have one or two pigs at a feast, pig feast on Roslyn, but they're raised and fed up to an enormous size, some 250 kilograms. And the pig is divided up to about 8 parts, and the original owner, the man who raised the pig, he'll keep the middle, the center of the big part, the main part of the pig, and maybe one or two other parts. And some other parts he'll give away to kin or to people who helped providing food for the pig while he was raised, or to some big man who is in debt to. And then from then on, the parts are different and independent transactions. So when they arrange a payment for a pig, you have two sides. You have the owner, the man who has the part of the pig, and there's the eater, that's the man who's going to sponsor the payment of the pig. And the eater, he is helped by a lot of contributors. Okay, they have to use a range of shells. They have to use big ones, and they have to use a number of small ones, or low-rank ones. The big ones, if we speak about Kerr, I'm only talking really about Kerr now, because that system is still working more or less all the way. So that's the best one to use. The small Kerr, they just contribute for given to the sponsor and transfer to the pig owner for nothing, but it gets more complicated when with the big ones, the ones that are the big ones on the road. So if you look at the diagram here, I have a stage one. And we have a dividing line between the side of the owner of the pig and the side of the eater or sponsor of the pig. There are several people involved on the owner's side also. There's himself and some people who are his helpers or who invest really in the transaction, so that they'll get an increment, something more back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
But let's start here and say that X is one of those men on the owner's side. So the pig is living still. It's not been killed. It's only a part they have arranged about, and they're going to find out how it's going to be paid. So from X goes a low rank. We better put the other ones. So there comes a line of people now. A, B, and maybe C.
What's that line called? Get it?
No.
Is it called anything?
I don't know. I don't think I have a number. I should have.
Anyway.
Oh. So this is the if it's the top curve, it used to be the main sponsor, the eater himself. But there are more low on the rope are other people, other supporters. So this is just some man on the side of the pig eater, the main arranger of the payment. And he gets this low rank curve goes from X, and via the main owner and the main eater, it comes to A. Okay, and that has the rank L.
Mm-hmm.
So A, he has this, should we call it a solicitary chair, or initiatory solicitary chair?
Yeah.
It could be compared maybe to Bach.
Mm.
And he goes to B, and he passes the chair on to B. Same chair, same way. And he goes to C, and he passes it on to C.
Mm-hmm.
So now the shell came from X, it went from A to B to C, it's with C.
Mm-hmm.
Next stage.
Then the mocha comes back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And are you just dreaming?
Look at
it. I need a mocha.
I'm waiting for the baggie to come back.
Okay, now we have stage two.
Later they all put skirts on and dance.
Stage two. Before this low rank here went to C, it's with him. He keeps it in his basket. He gives a higher rank one to B. That's M. B keeps that one. He gives a still higher rank one to A. N. A keeps that one. He passes the highest rank one. That one that's really going to be for X. He takes that one from his basket and he goes to X. These are things that they talk about before the arranged before the feast. It's only when the pig have actually been killed, having been cooked in hot stones, and it's been cut off, the part is being cut off, and the meat distributed to people, then they do this thing. Oh sorry, they do the payment before they eat.
But the exciting part
is while the pig is being cooked.
The exciting part, which is comparable, isn't it, to what we were talking about this morning, is where does B get this higher one? Where does C get this higher one? They've got to go borrow, don't they, during the day? Or
no.
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 Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think usually that.
I think
they talk about arranging these payments as very hard work. And the. Okay, the small shell came from A. He goes and asks different people. And maybe he talks with somebody and he says, no, I cannot do this thing. He finds B. B says, I have a shell you need.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And B has to find another one.
Right.
So they have, I think that, but it can be done in different ways.
Sure.
Different ways of writing this. Sometimes A keeps this and it's done in a different way. I cannot go into all this.
John, could I ask one point of information? When you started out at stage one, X was a relative of the pig owner. Remember?
Yeah, a relative, somebody
right.
who has a claim on the pig owner.
Right. Now, when it comes back, it's going back to X. Can he keep it or does he have to then do something to the pig owner, give something to the pig owner?
That depends. Sometimes he has to give it back.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
We come to that, I think, I hope.
Do you discuss how they divide out the pig amongst those people then?
Yeah, okay, let's just talk about how they divide the meat. They cut the meat off in slices. So let's say that this is number... What's it? If we have the curve over here. I mean, this is the top segment, so let's say it's the second one. So there'll be a rather big slice of pork for the second one. So the principle is that slice goes to A,
mm-hmm.
and then the A says, what about your side, B? How many more? And then they divide up the meat, and there's a piece of pork in proportion to the involvement of the contributors.
Yeah.
If B goes and gets, let's say, N level valuable from Q, then later on he presumably owes, when Q is in this situation, Q can solicit be, amongst others possibly, for that level value? I mean, is this sort of this continual play of depth?
I'm coming to that. I'm coming to what the relation is between, you see now there is a sort of association between rank levels all the way through the system. I think I'll go on reading.
Parts of pig can be matched to any one of these rank levels, apparently.
Is it the amount of the thing or where it comes from? Is that him and that end, or is it?
Many of the amount, but they have a traditional way of cutting it off. They don't cut it in a half part, but they have a way of doing it.
What other sorts of things are rank structures like this? I mean, a pig becomes a rank structure in that sense, in some sense, like a sort of an animal whose different parts are ranked and can be matched up with that rank.
Yeah.
Now,
are
there other kinds of objects or things or whatever you like of that word? That is, the whole system could be built up.
I think it's typical for pigs. They used to eat dogs before. And I think that that's the parts of dogs are also associated with the ranks. And again, when they had fever, there was part, the big part of the payment was for the head, I think, and then the lower rank was for the rest of the body. I'm very vague on this.
It's very important. In the Trobriand, if you give a man a pig and you want payment in this women's wealth banana leaves, each part of the body of the pig is ranked.
Yeah.
So when the man butchers the pig and gives it to his kin, if they take a certain part, they have to return a specific number of bundles matched to the part.
The
ribs are, you get maybe 150, but I forget, it's in my book. The head also, I think, brings a lot.
Yeah.
The head is a, you know, like the head of a fish, it's very good to eat.
Yeah.
Like the head of
the if you look at the drawing of the pig, what pig is that?
Are banana leaves the only way you can, I mean, the only nice thing to match up that way, or can you return other parts, similar parts of pigs and future pigs?
I miss the pigs, I haven't got them. If you look at the drawing of the pig, if you want to know the middle bag, that's the top one. The head is the next, the belly is the next one, because that's of course full pork, no bone. And I think the rump comes next. And then the legs, they're about equal, right? Same
way. Guess me that again.
Yeah, belly.
Pardon me.
Guess me that again, please.
Middle bag, that's the number one.
Yeah.
And the neck goes together with that one, always, for the owner, main owner.
Yeah.
So, head, that's number, no, that's second, lower rank.
Yeah.
Second from top.
Head.
Two.
Belly,
third. Belly,
three.
And rump, four.
And all eggs.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. I think they used to be more or less the same.
Yeah.
As far as I remember, they don't distinguish the legs. They're about same and same rank. Armstrong, he thought that that they had associations of parts of canoes and houses, but that I don't. I think he was quite wrong there. Let's go on. I've read this below stage two. The distribution of pork at the feast is supervised by the pig eater. He will give the appropriate number of slices of pork to A, who will pass the meat over to the subsidiary supporters B and C according to their level of involvement. It has already been mentioned how some of the higher rank chefs return to their owners immediately after the feast or at a later date. Those who have held these big shells must contend themselves with having been in the possession of a prized valuable for a while, only a short while, or a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
They must settle with a shell one or more steps lower in the chain. So, for example, we're not going to perform this, but what happens maybe after, for Kurt, it's somewhat more time, say something like 3 months. The big shell, which X called, will pass back, it will go to A, and then B will have to give N to A, and he'll pass it on to X. So that the man who's really, those who are in trouble there, B and C, A, he's out of the game. He only was involved for a very short time. And he's got the box, but he's got to show that quickly.
Huh.
X has had, X that was the recipient, he has had his gain reduced from the rank O to the rank M. A gets his shell back, and the shell of rank N, which came from B, or comes from B, goes to X. Let's go on. 28. Corresponding to this stepwise activation of shell ranks in exchange is the notion of association or complementarity between rank levels. Lower level ranks are seen as the stepping stones to or retreats from higher level ranks. This association is expressed by the term ma nu. Thus, when we have shell of rank M, which is lower than shell rank N, then M is the ma of N, and N is the nu of M. So, this one, L, is the ma of M. M is the ma of N, N is the ma of O. And correspondingly, M is newer to N, and N is newer to M, O is newer to N.
Mm-hmm.
So meaning of the words is, newer means point, for example, the point of a spear. Newer also has the connotation of a debt or obligation. The term ma is not so simple to explain. At mortuary feasts, aggrieved guests sometimes throw things like pieces of banana stem or firewood after men of the deceased village. These people dodge the objects by leaping aside or jumping. This maneuver is called ma. Before they used to throw spears, the ma may be understood as a way of dodging a point, dodging a death. The newer. In the connection of shell exchange, ma seems to carry the ambiguous meaning of stepping stone or dodge. I'm not so satisfied with this about the stepping stone. No, I mean, that's really something that I put in. But this about dodging, I mean, that's generally in the connotation. I have a picture of this jumping at the mortuary feast.
It's something thrown. Mm-hmm. It's something thrown after something else.
They talk about if a big man hits a lot of debts, they say his points are going into him everywhere. I mean, just like a tank full of spears.
Those valuable things are piercing him, and he or somebody else is throwing certain things after him which are of lesser value.
Yeah.
Also, certain valuables are put speared by other valuables.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So you may not need the notion of dodging or stepping stones, but just the notion of throwing.
Yeah,
after.
But you can see it from two positions. You can see it from the side of the big man.
Yes.
He's dodging.
The point.
But what the other man?
Yes, you're right.
The big man is dodging. The other man, he who holds the mat, the low one, gave away the big one.
Right.
For him, the mat is a pledge.
Yes.
Because the rule is that he can go later on present this mat to the man who got the big one before and say, now I have to use the big one, I have to use it for another payment. And then this big man should have and go and find the appropriate rank. It comes in. This notion of associated ranks has subtle ramifications, which I elucidate by a couple of examples. A person A accepts to let his shell of rank N support a payment if he receives a shell of rank M as his man. Gives a big one, receives a low one. A stakes his ships in the exchange system. It passes out of his direct control. But he does this on the condition of future reciprocity. He has not given up his claim to possession at rank level N, the higher rank. And he has not risked the full worth of his shell. He holds the ma one or more steps lower in the hierarchy. I mean, the ma is not so, if it's a good ma, it's very near to the.
Yeah.
To the other one.
Mm-hmm.
The man is a sort of place or guarantee for him. It's A's evidence that he contributed the newer of rank N, and it represents his claim to the world to possession at this level. He may in some circumstances go to B and present the man demanding return on his shell. If B is able to procure the original shell, the original individual shell, A has no further claim. If this is not possible, B should give A a shell of slightly better rank if B is a good man.
You said the original, it was a particular show.
Yeah, because
yeah.
I forgot to tell you that all the inducts in the higher ranks, they're individually named.
They're individually
named. Yeah, so they know. And they know Kerr, I mean, they know quite well their Kerr also. So very often they have a small piece of, what is it? Thread, color string tied around the curve,
yeah.
So that they can know it again. And they
yeah.
have, I mean, they scrutinize these things all the
mm-hmm.
time. They have special marks, they remember their curve.
Mm-hmm. Nobody ever unties the bit of string, of course.
It's untied, of course, when it's put on the long rope, but they're very particular about when they afterwards cut it off, that the original curve are established.
Yes.
And I have seen this, this women who do this de-stringing and putting on the rope and then taking it off the rope and making it into curve. That's
yeah.
that's the work that is usually done by women. I have seen on one occasion men do it, but women usually do it. And they put them onto the grass first while they do it, sort of making it secret. It's not the they used to sort of hide this operation of taking stitches off the small string and putting on the big rope. They used to put their grass first or hide it,
mm.
to it sort of in a hidden way. If B is a good name. But A may also prefer to let the land grow itself. If A is approached by another man, C, who wants a shell of rank M for a payment, A may give him the man. That man was of rank M. He gave away the bigger one, N, and he had M as his man. He may give this one to C and demand the return of a better shell. C must agree to repay a shell of somewhat higher rank, say of rank X, where M is smaller than X and X is smaller than N. By successive transactions of this kind, the shell of rank X may be turned into one of rank Y, and again into one of rank Z, where Z is equals N, or maybe even larger or higher rank than N. So in this in this example, there was some difference in rank. I mean, there were some steps of ranks in between. But it's a very subtle thing. This you may have a curve of a certain category or rank. And another one of the one immediately lower, but it shows up that inside those categories there are also differences of value. So you can manipulate this in many ways. So if a man comes to you and wants a shell of a certain rank, you may have that one, but that may be a young man, the one that is really your guarantee, your place, that you'll get a bigger one back. But maybe you've been waiting a very long time to get that bigger one back, and the one who got it, he can't repay you or won't do it. So you may decide to forget about him and take your man and give to this other person who comes. But this person is then under obligation to return a bigger one. And this way you approach something a little bit like interest, because he takes a shell and has to repay a bigger one. There are no strict rules that prescribe the appropriate man for each category on duck and curve. An actual exchange, this is open to consideration.
Sorry, John,
yeah.
when he repays this bigger, this increment, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that something grass or is it establish a new debt?
Between them.
Mm. So, Andrew gives me a numbers, an M, and I give him something back, which is higher.
I couldn't say.
Is it finished between us or is it something more?
Right. If it's
I didn't push so far into the thing. I wouldn't say. I mean,
wouldn't it rather depend on our relationship as otherwise constituted? I mean, instead of working with A's and B's and C's,
mm-hmm.
isn't most of this second to some sort of kinship and our final network?
To me, by looking at the what material I got, there isn't really any very well structured kinship. Besides a bride birth, I mean, which is paid from the groom side to the bride side, there are no sort of ordered sort of a continual.
One of the problems, it looks with this kind of an ABC model, that these people are only in sort of a singular relation, a once-time relation.
Yeah.
Presumably, these people have multiple debt relations of various kinds to each other, and that's part of the problem of understanding what's really going on.
Yeah, certainly. But I think one problem of what it has occurred to me many times during the discussions is that people present sort of models. Sometimes they are norms. It's how people say that it should work. Sometimes they are strategies. It's what people do or say that's a smart way to do it. And
yes.
Other people would say, no, that's rubbish. You shouldn't do it like that.
Yes.
So, and it takes, it's extremely difficult and takes a very long time really to work into this and go through actual exchanges. And my lack of command of the language was so that I couldn't really do it. And it would also take quite a long time because I had a big, big piece which I really quite good data, but I would have had to go back 10 years after and find out how all the things then were.
Yes, sure. It would be very complicated indeed, but presumably in a population as small as that on one island, there must be rather extensive interrelationships.
There are about 2,500 people on the ocean.
Yes. And even in terms of selection of who your ABC are going to be in a lineup in any particular deal, one would have thought that the strategies would be deeply influenced by past relationships between them.
Certainly. I think we should try and get quickly through and then we can discuss a bit more.
Is also
that
kind of problem.
That's right, it's not very meaningful unless it's set into that context.
Much of the discussion in the circle of elders assembled when a payment is composed is concerned with deliberations about the proper rank of the mass involved in the mobilization of big channels. The table of the next page is therefore only an approximate guideline on manual relationships. So if you compare that to the first list of the categories, which we had on page 12, you can work it out. I don't think that we should go into it, really. But I mean, there is an association. If you see at the page 12 list on that categories, you have Charmandy, number 5 from the top. And in this list at table 7 of page 30, you can see that the map of Charmandy is Pimban or Perunundum. Pimban, that's two steps down from Charmandy. Also, Perunundum could be used as the map of Charmandy. And so it goes all the way down. Another example illustrates the procedure of rank reduction in exchange. In the case shown at page 27, X initially, that was the one we went through, initially was presented with a shell of rank O, but later had to give it up again and settle with one a step lower in the chain of mobilization. He gets the ma of the initial shell. Is that clear to you? He got a big shell and he's getting one a bit lower one, and that's in a ma relationship to the big one.
Yes.
This is a common procedure with big curve. When big and dot are concerned, the system is stationary further down in the hierarchy. So the person who received a chairman dot and dot cannot have it reduced to the man of the chairman day only, a Pimba or a Quernando. He must, that would be at the level of about Pimba, Quernando, but also in this range, Ndaba auto circulation. So the recipient will only get the man of the man, or a shell even lower in the chain. Exactly.
Maybe
there is a set of terms about the steps leading towards a big and dark referring to the degree of removedness from the target level. One of those words in this set of terms of steps leading up to a big and dark is, for example, carpe. I think you got that word in your paper.
Here comes the German.
And that seems to be really of a Melanesian root, this car to grab. It means half pay, I hold half pay, that means half.
This is where the chairman.
I grab a whole half.
Yeah.
I mean, he's halfway onto the big
I'm
one.
I'm saving my.
I mean, he only got half. He couldn't have the big one because that's out of circulation. He got one half down by the hierarchy. Okay. So page 30, bottom. So in the cases where a pig owner, a house builder, the mother's brother or the bride, or a young man being rewarded for beast labor, are being presented with a higher rank in duck, they must in the end accept to retain only a lower level reflection of the variables. Some statements advanced by informants indicate that this situation is only half-heartedly accepted. One hears that if a person
that's lovely.
If a person holds such a shield, say it's a Lundborg, that is really the picture of a higher ranking duck, and he lends it to another man, he should be repaid with a really good enough, say a Pimpin. But this does not at all seem likely, as in double such rank are stationary. I mean, I got just conflicting statements, and I mean, you must all have have met this in the field, that people
sure.
tell you all different sort of things that don't match. It rather discloses a contradiction between an ideology of an open mobile system where a man can rise in exchange to seize the high ranking duck, and the reality of a fossilized hierarchy. As I stated earlier, none of the Russell Shell money are reducible to a common standard of value, that's in the beginning of the thing. But in a circumscribed way, they may be compared, and a form of exchange is possible. The term ndo denotes an interchange of things of different kind. The exchange with Sudest of pots and wooden platters for shell necklaces was mentioned to me as an instance of ndo. Exchange of ndo and kirk is called ndonda and ndoke. If some medium rank ndo is due to a man and a repayment is going to be made, he may prefer, I mean, this is one of these, we are now into this credit relations between people. And there's a man who has a claim on another one to give him a some ndo.
Sorry, John, you said an exchange of a ndo with a kirk is called a both in debt, whatever it is. But are they alternative things, or is it, I've got a...
Ndonda means the payment of lower rank, an amount of lower rank that for one bigger one.
Right,
and
but you've got two words of the same thing, so it worries me.
If some medium rank doubt is due to a man and repayment is going to be made, this man may prefer to get ndonda instead of a single shield. The payment should consist of some ndaxi. Ndaxi is a set of 10 ndak of a different rank. They don't have to be the 10 lowest rank. I mean, they are several of the same one. But I mean, a series of ndak of increasing rank, low rank ones. So the payment should consist of some ndaxi, sets of 10 ndak, headed by the umay of the original shell. In practice, the leading shield of the Ndonda is often more than one step down the ladder from the original. This is because the hierarchy is got stationary far down. In this case, the Ndonda is a true compensation to the person who once before owned the Ndonda. This has to be said here. I mean, this form of Ndonda is a true compensation to the person who had this particular Ndonda before. He had the Ndak, he gave it to another one, this one has to repay him. He doesn't want that one back, he wants a number of low-ranking Ndak. But this is not a thing, I mean, the man doesn't take an amount of low-ranking Ndak off from his basket and give to the man. It has to be arranged at a feast, and people contribute in the same way as they make other payments. So it's infrequent. In other cases, Ndak is rather a substitute. This is the case when it replaces the big ndak that people cannot get anymore. For example, the chairman, only 20 on the island, stationary, used for bridal. And I wouldn't talk about bridal, but say a pig, for the main part of the pig, transferred to the pig owner for a night only, goes back again. and then instead he gets an amount of lowering that. The collection on that transferred to a pig owner or house builder when the chairmanry has been withdrawn is known that of the chairmanry. The form of the payment is the same. One debt of medium rank considered somehow in a mere relation to the initial debt or the first big one, and some debt the number of value and value of which depends on the rank of the original. Ndonda then forms a segment of the hierarchy of Ndap. It's headed by a lower rank associate of the Ndap being exchanged or performer exchanged, and that below this level is included in numbers inversely proportional to their rank level. You can see it on the drawing. You see this, what I made on the blackboard before, the pyramid of shells. So that's to the left, this is a universal law. And there's chairman, one single individual in that, those 20 on the island, can't go to the person. He gets a substitution. At the top of that one is chairman being man, and an increasing numbers as you go lower down in ranks of lower rank dog. And if it's still more low on like the Tebulun one, that's the right drawing, then the Tebulun one man is nearer to the Tebulun one, because now we're in the range of dog which are still circulating. So, or just about still circulating. So you don't have to, so the Mare can be nearer to the temporal, and then an amount of lower other ones.
Oh.
So really this gap between the Mare and the big one is filled up with an amount of lower smaller ones. A Ndoke is composed similarly to Ndonda, but consists of both Ke and Da. It's a large payment that seems to exceed the value of the curb being substituted. Probably the prestige of the person who pays in Dorker is at stake. I mean, I've never seen anyone. There were two at the same piece and at the west end of Roslyn. I tried to go there, and the alarms broke down, and we couldn't reach it, and I didn't see the thing. I have only tried to reconstruct someone's. It's very infrequently done sometimes. Page 33. Apart from the cases where the Ndondap substitutes one of the big Ndap out of circulation, exchange payments are not common. They come about by collection of contributions like other payments. To summarize the pattern of shell money loans, higher rank Ndap and sometimes higher rank Ke may be borrowed against security. They may also, especially at the pig feast, be involved in change or mobilization against the deposit of a man. Such change of mobilization may be de-escalized, and the big shells again will boom. This is always done with big Ndap and often with big Ke. Lower rank Ndap and Ke are granted as mutual assistance. I mean, people just give them to each other. Axe blades, necklaces, and the Ngar, that's those ceremonial item plates, mainly flow and restrict the exchange, especially in the symmetric mortuary conversations. There's more to mortuary payments that I do in this paper, but I don't think we should take that in.
One point, John, obviously it's tremendously high circulation going on here, and masses of debt being created. Now, have they got any way of recording the debt that they all get into with different people? Do they, you know,
they use pieces of pen and paper now. But I mean, but they also have what I've been working out while we've been here is that people do economic exchange or exchange of valuables, but at the same time they communicate. I mean, they don't, originally when they made up those systems, they didn't have paper and they didn't have any form of law which could enforce contracts. So they had to rely on other forms of communication of those things. So that adds a dimension that is sort of taken out of our economic transactions. So what the memory is his memory is that he has a man. I mean, you may have a man ask him to see the curd in his baskets, and he would say, "Oh, this one, that's all right." That could be
the
same.
It's keto transaction too.
These ones are keto. They don't use the words, but they are just my mindset.
Yeah.
And other ones, No, they are meh, I lend out a big one. This is my meh.
Yeah.
So in this way they can remember those things. And
the sort of tokens for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's another thing that those transactions, if they are bound big seals, they're always done in public and people witness them. Sometimes they are handed around the shields and other people touch them. So that's the sign that they've witnessed the what was taking place. Should we take the last one? Only a few pages. The structure of social reproduction. Let us consider further the conditions of reciprocity. I described how it is claimed that a man may use his man to get his own share back. This is possible because pig feasts are often arranged reciprocally. The man who ate a pig before, that means he sponsors his payment, he will himself raise a pig, and the former owner will become the eater of the next pig, the new one. This often takes place years after the first feast. In this way, the transaction is reversed and the payment goes the opposite way. Former contributors may now be reaped. Not all the part transactions are reversed at the same feast. Reciprocity comes about independently for different parts of a pig. Because they are independent transactions, I mean, therefore they can be independently reversed. 34. But if restricted reciprocity governed exchange, the system would be stable. How would it be possible to make a gain so let the man grow itself? There is a pervasive belief in the reward exchange will bring them in. The system is generous, you can say. Well, that's what I say. I mean, if you make a contribution to a man's payment, you can seek him next time you are in need. This is if you give him some small amount, maybe. He will return you more or better shares than the ones you gave him before. Remember that I said that low, small rank dog, they don't have this mere thing. They just give for nothing, as they say. But when you then seek the man later and say, I'm going to eat pig, do you have any, and I gave you before, then this man should give him more or better rank ones. But this is in the low end. That's what they say, I mean, that's an expectation. Let be that this is often an illusion. People also complain about the tricks and stinginess of the big men. Still, I think there is something behind the ideology of profit. To identify possibilities of profit or individual accumulation, one must consider the total system of the total system of social reproduction. It all turns around the two axes of bride wealth and pig feasts. Every man that marries incurs heavy debts on account of his bride wealth payment. Parts of it binds him to his close senior relatives, his father, his mother's brother, or elder brother. Part of the debts are to a wider range of elders, and especially one or two big men who themselves contribute to the chattel money or sponsor the collection of contributions on his behalf. Some of these debts are long outstanding, especially the big curve. Some are only repaid when the man receives bride wealth for his own daughter. In the meantime, he is under obligation to his patrons. They expect support from him when they arrange payments, and they expect to benefit from his transactions. One way a man can meet such diffuse social claims is by giving people parts of pigs raised by him to exchange at feasts. He gives away the parts and they become pig owners and they arrange the exchange and get the payments. Or he may accept that they share in the rewards of parts where he himself is the owner by investing solicitary share money. The big man could be the ex involved in this part of a part transaction. By investing solicitary share money, which will grow through the process of mobilization, I mean investing ill and getting over in bank. By means of the circulation of share money, social obligations are thus imposed on young men through the institution of bride wealth. These obligations are transformed to rise over the rewards of the production of the young men. The pig feast is the institution where the surplus labor is realized. People may contribute to house or canoe payments because they feel obliged or because they think it may pay later on. Because, I mean, this man they give their shells, he may give them more back in another time. So the pig feast they likewise contribute in expectation of return, but they also come because they want meat. Pork is about the only luxury available to anyone who has got shares to spend. It's the supreme good. In a limited sense, therefore, the pig beast is the one great market of Russell economy. The pig beast makes for the accumulation and turnover and the circulation of showmen.
Mm-hmm.
Enough to pay for the houses and canoes of the big men. It seems that pigs are objects of great over-evaluation. The total payment for a pig is larger than the Breitling. There are indications that Breitling and probably also pig payments have inflated during the last generations. This would reflect the more open and democratic and inverted commas society after pacification.
I just wanted to ask a point of information. Is there any indication that pigs were equated with human beings in the past, or are, that there is a person-pig connection?
I couldn't say. I counted the shells. I didn't know about it. Okay, I don't say it's not relevant. It's extremely relevant, but I did do it.
I think it's probably
in terms of general principle. I think
it's probable in the amongst the Kamano in the eastern highlands of New Guinea, a man was about the weight of three pigs. The pigs were rather small, and as the price for a human body was three pigs, about the same weight in meat. So that's some indication of that.
This pig weighed more than people, so that would make sense that it.
There's a situation in the South. I don't know whether it reflects at all in
what they call
where sorcerers supposedly exchange human flesh. I mean, dead bodies, which they call pig, pig. And this still goes on. People talk about it. That if he died by sorcery, then the sorcerers convene. They dance on top of his grave, they vibrate up the body, they spirit it off to a spirit feast where they divide the pig amongst them and, the man's body amongst them and call it their pig.
Well, there's not just pig, that's a man.
Yeah. I wanted to say to Fred that if we're talking about value and labor costs, I would say that it's there's something wrong when they pay more for a pig. It certainly takes more labor to provide a woman, a marriageable woman, care and food for many years, to feed a pig up in two years.
It is fairly clear to me that these people are very mystified, so.
Yeah,
I disagree. I think they know what they're doing.
I think we are.
Can I ask one more question?
Could I finish off the thing? It's only a very few.
Yes.
There are indications that bivalves and probably also pigments have inflated during the last generations. More people had access to participate in an exchange system less dominated by the old hiring machines. But it would also reflect the fact that the internal system has to compete with the outside world for the labor power of young men. The big men have wisely banned cash from bribe-wealth payments. They have kept the monopoly over the control of circulation of women on Rossley. They have been able to do this because the bribe-wealth medium only circulates internally. The control over women even enables the big men to appropriate part of the young men's earnings of the labor market. They say that the young man who fails to remember his big man with gifts of European goods or cash on his return from labor will have to wait a long time to get married. So the shell money is an element in a structure of reproduction linking the circulation of women to the circulation of surplus product. It sustains a relation of production whereby elders, and especially the real big men, are able to appropriate the surplus labor of younger men over and above the labor needed to satisfy basic needs.
Right.
The Dobrons deal with this by not paying bribe-wealth in at least 50% of cases.
Yeah.
About 50% of cases they pay bribe-wealth, but in other cases they don't.
But the bribe-wealth medium of in Dobro were much more, they couldn't be controlled because they're going in and out of there.
these shoulder really sort of pig wealth meetings, don't they?
I was going to ask, do you think all this emphasis at the end got on contrasting bride wealth with payments of pig? And what I'm wondering is, if you had put into this analysis the mortuary ceremonies, would that have sort of cast a different light on what you're talking about in terms of women and bride price?
Yeah.
I mean, see, the problem, I think, is when we talk about marriage and bride price, and the masim, it seems pretty obvious that we also have to talk about the exchanges of death, because
it's
that's
kind of
really
the thing
with mortuary ceremonies is that at Rosal, a man dies, or a woman, a week after they have the mortuary payment finished. I mean, the surviving spouse's people, his or her side, is paying to the deceased kin. And when the surviving spouse dies years after, the payment is going is reversed.
But, you know, is the payment a lot?
Yeah.
Does it mean a lot of people get into debt?
I wouldn't say no. I think it's sort of relatively low. There are some of those stone axes involved and some necklaces, but the amount of stuff isn't really very, very big.
So stone axe plays are only involved in the marriage, in the mortuary.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Well, in some circumscribed way, they can also exchange with. Remember that a way of paying security for the loan of the curve was the man of the curve plus the stone axe play. But if that dilemma is reversed at protection, then you will have a big curve exchange for a smaller curve plus an axe play. Also, axe plays. Sometimes they do pick this in the way that, say, the five or six or eight biggest curve on the rope, they are being repaid with the stone blades immediately. And they say that to kill the curve with the stone blades. So there can be no question of returning those curve, reversing that transaction. They're killed with the stone blades.
Jan, did you deal here with how the moi gets checked out of the system? In other words, if it's returned back, then you don't need this pledge again. It's like counterfeit money, right?
No, yeah. You see, you got also this this thing with people, for example, having built a house, they get a big shell and they receive a lower rank one, which is associated with the big one in some way.
Yeah.
It seems for you, you saw it in the way that this. This is the some admission into a more higher exchange, and that this is a sort of ticket that can only be used once.
Yeah.
But I think that when people are arranging these chains of mobilization for pigs, they don't have to be a one that has been called mayor in this sort of context. It could be any low rank there. So it's, I don't think it works in the way you say.
But how would a moi, not to get into this, because I'm tired too, but how would a moi that was given to someone when I, in exchange for one of his valuables, when it's returned to him, when the whole thing is returned to him, it's closed, so
if I took a big one from you and gave you a moi, then say 2 years after, you go to me. This is still, that's what they told me.
Yeah.
You go to me and present the man, or you say, I'm going to present the man.
Yeah.
I want to have the big one back again.
Yeah.
Or the original one, if you have it, or maybe one a little bit halfway better than to another ring than if I've lost it. If I've been
doing
it. So you give me this man, I have it, and
it's bad.
Just an ordinary curve. It's only a man for you, it's not for anybody.
So then it has to be witnessed or something to be erased. What if I, you know, I guess if it's not in my hands, you can't, then it's nothing anymore, right? If I don't have it anymore, then it couldn't do any damage.
So if I am staying and won't read it,
then I can work with it.
Then you can go and you can try and work in the other way, let the man go itself.
But
and sometimes people they send the big men, they cheat with this. A man comes to you and wants some shell, in this other sort of transaction.
Right.
And you say, oh, I only have this one. That's a man in another transaction.
Yeah.
But it isn't. It's really only. I mean, you. It's just shit out of your basket.
Oh. Oh wow.
So,
oh, yeah.
So you teach him because you get more. This.
So really, I'm wise. It's only relationship specific. I mean.
Hmm.
Right. I mean, it.
Yeah.
It really gets real fudgy if it's thrown out there in another.
Yeah. You have to rely.
I mean, it's lying, right? Basically, I mean. You're lying.
They can't tell
you. In this last example,
it could be a lie.
Yeah, it could be a lie. They say the big thing.
Sorry, it's a bit off the point, but I've also been told to me that the shells that they got were worth nothing unless they were pierced, the way a man's nose is pierced. Did you get anything like that about the hole of the mountain?
Yeah, I've sometimes seen at usually
know.
I think it, yeah, sometimes I've seen they used to put them out on the ground, they arrange these payments on the ground, and some big men may come and pierce, take a small stick from them,
mm-hmm.
or a match, I mean, burn off match, and stick it through the hole, and then he can pay them. But there's something more to that, there must be, I couldn't get further into it.
Yeah.
You have to be low.
Can't call after
Shane. Good
job.
I have pictures
yeah.
if you want to see.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Not
I feel very frustrated because this is the first opportunity we've had to talk seriously about pigs. And now we're finished.
All those the ones stay.
One last question. Do these people have any perception of the cool? Do they have.
For God's sake, Jerry. Stop me asking my question about pigs and you are asking.
I don't
know.
Papers on Kailuna and Spirulina by Harris, and then the general transactional theory papers by Chris and Andrew, comparative ones. It looks like we can press through possibly to a conclusion of this series of papers are called Myth and Magic is Tomorrow. I would hope that we could probably press through with these things so as to have no papers on Sunday and simply general discussion, possibly trying to summarize and extend the basic points that have been made. Means some of the minor papers might be squeezed out, but we could conceive we get them on today or tomorrow. If everybody's agreeable, then we'll use Sunday as a discussion day only and have no papers at all. Tombe should lead off tomorrow. Tombe's paper is quite long and very interesting and very complicated, so I think if we started at 11:30 we would be doing it an injustice. Would it be possible to start tomorrow at 11
mm-hmm.
and have coffee at
10:45?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives 2 hours to discuss this very interesting paper for which
yeah.
he has a great deal more outside of the paper to bring forward. Now, Fred, yes.
Yeah, there was sort of a consensus yesterday, a number of us were going to come early. Is that still right?
Right. Fred wants to give, tell us briefly about the paper that you'd like to give.
It has to do, first of all, with a model, a Woodlock model of how the society works. This is inside, it has nothing to do with Kula to begin with. But it also raises some very interesting historical questions. And the contrast between Woodlock and the Torbjörn stuff at this point is rather dramatic. And that's why I think it's important for me to say something so that at least people in the Torbjörns and the whole line of islands from Woodlark to the Torbjörns know what's going on here.
Yes.
It will help them, I think through their own stuff and kind of contrast.
What time?
So, since we start at 11, the time is better, we have to start probably at
9:30. 9:30.
Now, I think Fred's paper should really be considered optional.
Yes.
Basically
okay.
for those who've done field work nearby and otherwise don't feel obligated because Saturday is
yeah,
likely to be a pretty heavy day.
Here.
Now Mrs. Wayne
here.
Is coming tonight for dinner.
Here.
Yeah.
Helena Wayne Malavska. Her husband is coming as well, Harry?
I imagine
right.
so.
Right. Well, we're not certain.
She may
that.
Do anything.
But she'll have dinner with us, and I think rather than, since everybody was so exhausted last night, rather than do anything tonight, we just have a session with her in the bar after dinner. How about that? So. Everybody
is there a bar that we might sort of retire to to get out of this chemical ambience?
I think the ICI people are gone.
I think they're leaving.
Or maybe not.
Have they?
Maybe not.
I saw
yeah.
a lot of people.
Well, there are no people at coffee. I mean, usually they have coffee at
Well, I think we can pick it up impromptu, but in fact, if we go across to the town bar, being Friday night, we'll be running the big crowds. So if we stay inside of Kim's and drive the chemists away by some.
But they're gone, I think.
They're gone. I think over in the corner of the bar we can make a nice setting so anybody who likes coffee can be there and we won't do.
Chip said the 28th, not to mention backwards, so I'm gonna be real quick. I assume people can read and are tired of doing this in the summers.
I'm going to try to lead the discussion in the direction of trade, which is very appropriate from paper. Perspective.
The question of my paper addresses is why basically was Kadawaga such a westernized village and in light of the conflict being on Kula, why did they not Kula? In light of Malinowski's discussion of Kailiuna, the Kailiuna Kula community, which he pointed out was a community wherein boats were being built and which floated a large fleet, he says 22 boats, Kadawaga say there were more, but I don't know, how true that is. Kadawaga is located in an ideal spot for housing and having a fleet. They have all the wood around to build boats. They pride themselves as expert boat builders and expert sailors. And they insist that historically they had a lot to do with Kula and were very dominant in running out around Kula on the north side. They also insist that the Kabbalah chieftainship has historically rivaled that of Omarakana, and they put it down that they basically, between them, had divided up the island so that Omarakana dominated Kirwina, whereas the Kadawaga Kabbalah dominated the outer islands to the west, all of those, Kaliuna, Muluwata, Kuya, Tuma, and afterwards in Sumsuma. So, and they talk a lot about the equality of them and about how they are all their close relatives of equal rank, and they basically divide up the area and reinforce one another. And this reinforcement does seem to be important to them today. But when I got there, Kadawaga was very different from what I had expected, and they indicated in the paper. I kind of thought that if indeed many of my impressions of Kirwina were that it was quite a conservative place, that Kadawaga should be even more so. After all, they hadn't had that much first-hand contact with Dimdims being off the beaten track. Government patrols only got out there occasionally. They certainly hadn't had this, the anthropologist, tourist, researcher of all sorts number going through. And of course, I was very startled to discover that I had landed in a veritable bastion of Westernness. That Kadawaga, all of these things you don't see in Kadawaga when you're laying at like the clothes and decorations. People would never wear them for any occasions. Kadawagans preferred to dress in calico whenever possible. Women, teenage girls, kids never wore these little short grass skirts. They all wore plain skirts. They made grass elaborate skirts for more short ceremonies, but they never wore for festivals or anything else. If it was part of the time, they put on calico. Things like this. None of them wore paya. None of them wore just any of these kinds of decorations. They didn't putuma, except boys on boat launching occasions, basically very rarely. They just were out of all of this kind of thing. The village itself, aside from the fact that in the middle of the Bikubaku that was Katabai's Niku, the village itself didn't look like a chiefly village. Katabai's house was a rundown little shack. It had no chiefly decoration on it. And as I point out in the paper, he was, of course, waiting to build himself a modern brick house. The village work week was organized. Now, I don't know this much about how other village work weeks are organized, but Kadawagans did announce, and I did put this in the paper, that their work week was organized like the Dimdims. And that is to say that every morning the village had a task and they had a meeting, but it was a different task every morning, and they said that it was scheduled. That it was done in formal order, like Dimdims always run their time very scheduled. The Kadawagans had done this. It took me quite a while to figure out what was going on, because in the first place I kept getting testimonials about the strength of Katuba and the Kadawaga Tabalu, and on the other hand I kept getting pushed in the direction of understanding how modern and progressive this village is, and that it indeed is superior to all other Togian villages on the ground. And it took me a long time before people were willing to talk about the fact that Katuba's granduncle had in fact killed off every other Tuvalu male in the village other than children, and that when Karabai acceded to me and became Tolivano, literally village owner, he was only, he was only something like 9 years old. And there was no way that he could have inherited any of the Tuvalu Megaba that was behind their claims in their alienation. He had virtually no strength whatsoever.
Why don't people suggest why the other Tuvalu is still wrong?
Well, they said that his uncle, they said two things. One, that his uncle was a nasty old man. That would be wretched. The other was that he was afraid of them. They insisted. He was afraid of them. That they would kill him.
Oh, yeah.
They were very rivalrous, and I think this came out very strongly in Katawaga, more so I think than I've read in some of the Kirwin material, that in some senses Malinowski kind of presented Dala as very solidary units. Katawaga stressed the internal rivalry in them. That they basically, being people who could physically contain the same magic, the same sorcery, especially the very powerful ones like the Tuvalu, they were each other's prime rivals and potential killers. And therefore, they also pointed out the fact that this man lived to a ripe old age because he did kill them all off. That they didn't get him. He died a very elderly man.
Assuming these are sorcery accusations, was there anything like influenza, dysentery, that could be identified as killing?
Well, the thing was interesting because they were taken off over time. They insisted that it didn't happen all at once, that he didn't just go through and wipe them out, that they went over the years. So it became even more... It became to them more difficult in the sense that... Cuddleys did by now, at least, attribute disease to other kinds of things. They attributed some of that to Dimbians. They knew about disease. But they couldn't attribute this to them.
They had a lot of plantation workers, so they could be using European poisons.
Yes. From Marilla.
From various places, yes. There's a lot of European poison, including formic acid, circulating in the trophy, which is pretty deadly stuff.
They did stress when they, this is the other thing, they were having difficulty with words because they didn't have the words. They did tend to stress physical poisons a lot. I mean, people, Katabai was known not to have any words of strength, but when it went like to Kuyao, people would say that they would certainly not want to have to eat with him because presumably some of the poison might have been left over.
Mm-hmm.
He might have that. They didn't know, but they would give it back.
Since in the origins myth or story history of the Tuvalu, the whole long, very long detailed story is about establishing hierarchy within one Tuvalu Dala. And it's really the splitting off of people, and the hierarchy is established in the stories through mistakes that some people make, and that reduces them in rank. You get the Guyao, Baboon, and Babusi distinction. So even there, you get the ideology, at least in any rate, and obviously the history, because they believe it's real history, that there is always a need amongst Guyao to establish hierarchy, which means that there will be one person, and they're finally they use sorcery to get their own.
You're right. This is also, it's very interesting because, you know, when you were talking about Obama coming, Katabai claims to be dietarily identical. If they haven't made any dietary mistakes, he can have access to it, but they don't in fact do it. They don't bother. And that was a very strong thing. And you had this process of one in there. Okay. Anyway, I had to find a new source for strength. I discussed a couple of reasons why Katabai was allowed to become Tolivano under the circumstances, but that his becoming Tolivano certainly did not resolve the religious problem. And this thing gets into conceptualizations of social order in Katawaga. And I present them very, very briefly. I don't really want to go into them. If anybody wants, I have the paper they're taken from, which is called Life in Two Worlds, with me, and I haven't run it. But anybody wants it, I'll get a copy run for them. But what they did in essence was look to the other source of strength, which was to the European, to the Dimdim, to see if they could manage to help Katawai pick up strength there. And they started out, they say, with church. because of course church is more like Daland and traditional inner strength of words and force and spiritual force and things of this sort than is government, which they see standing to it as its outer manifestation, as the church is very inner and government is very outer. And so they picked up on God and tried replacing effectively the traditional Dala set of cosmology with God. This works fairly well, though it's had some rather peculiar relations. It does well because Seward said last night, God being, he said being masculine, but I was being masculine, God transacts rather than pulls, which is a very feminine thing to Katawagans, and that means he's a source of life, not death. That basically, at the same time, he's an inner spirit, his innerness is masculine rather than feminine, which is an anomaly to Katawagans, but does have the advantage of being very solidly rooted in giving rather than taking.
This word for pulling, could you give those names?
Yeah, they talk a lot about Megva, word Ibiu.
Ibiu. Yes.
And Yavada is always giving. His words don't. People listen voluntarily, they don't get pulled. Because they can see what he gives.
Is it God or is Jesus?
It's Yavada. They were not very big. The only point of Yesu Kereso was, again, the demonstration that God gives rather than pulls, because, of course, the Virgin Mary conceived.
Do they have a sense of keeping or caius, the refusal, connected with pulling?
Keeping
or reject or refusal connected with pulling?
Yeah,
pulling
implies resistance.
Yeah. Well, it implies the overriding of your mind.
You see?
No. Well, it implies coercion. It's the overturning, you know, what you're getting. The turning around of your mind without you having any self-will anymore, which is the opposite of God. And the amazing thing about God is exactly this kind of thing. The other thing that is amazing about God is that since he transacts rather than pulls, the contradiction between the outer world of the Bhikkhu Bhakkhu, in which everything must be giving and transaction, and the inner world of the Vala, is reversed. And according to Katawagan ordinary ideology, the official view of the world is the outer view of the Bhikkhu Bhakkhu, and the inner view of the Vala can never move into it officially without death intruding. And Yavada transforms this because everybody can come into Yavada's house since he transacts rather than pulls. Therefore, the inner world can come safely into the outer world, and it's a very smooth meshing. It does, as I pointed out, diminish women strongly because, of course, it moves masculinity into the innerness as opposed to having femininity. And so we don't get nearly as much of the female expression, the female importance in Katawaga as Annette describes in the value at all. They do Sigali at the mortuary types, but not on anything like the scale. They had to remind men to pay attention to them. Twice, I think, in public meetings, I heard women actually have to stand up and say, we try and cooperate with you men. If you don't cooperate with us, where will life go? I mean, it's unthinkable, I would think, that women would have to ask that in some of these other villages. I don't know.
But they do use the female valuable still in mortuary transactions.
Yes, well, they have to because people, in fact, do reproduce with sex. As long as that is the case, they will have to.
How do you mean they have to? I mean, they say they have to.
Well, in effect, one of the things that happens in Katawaga with mortuary bundles is that there's a difference between sex and gender.
Yes.
Sex is genitals reproducing people, and that's very inner and it's very spiritual, and it should not make a body. It's anathematic to physical production. That you would use sex, which is an inner pulling, rather than an external labor and giving. And the result of this is that one of the things that's very important in the net said about mortuary ceremonies is that people buy back Dala title. But in Katawaga, officially, they don't. That's the inner view of things. The outer view of things is that women are men. The only difference between them is women work for Dova, whereas men work for land. And at death, men can't appeal to Megava, which is inner, because there is no sexual and any magical difference. Therefore, this can't exist. And women make life through Dova by bringing back to life the people who have died along with the deceased. And so there's a very strong distinction between women negating sex through gender. It's really, it gets a common, they still do that. Just as men, this is why I was asking Stuart about boats. at birth, men show the world that boat building is a complementary labor transaction rather than sexual, and they sort of go surety for women producing children in the same set of transactions.
What is that again, sir?
Because men build boats
yes.
and show how it's done
yeah.
in public,
uh-huh.
women bearing children aren't lying when they say it wasn't sex. They say the same thing happened inside the house and that made a child. And they
I
show
see.
You that men do it in public and demonstrate it. Basically, just as women show you how you can bring people to life through the things you've made in skirts. So men
is this, the, is this the men? Opposing the women here, or is the ideology, or is it that the men are explaining something that the women do for the society as a whole? I mean, do they explain it that way, or is it a we do this, you do that?
No, it's more that there really are two realities. That's the outer reality and the inner reality. And to
yeah.
maintain the outer reality under some circumstances, at birth, men sort of go surety for women, and at death, women go surety for men. It's the best I can say. I really don't.
Susan,
can I
get
I give you the other paper, you can really go if you want.
Yeah. I'm looking at page 8. The sense you have of inner being, and in one hand you're talking, I'm not quite sure exactly what the limits are of the notion of this inner world spirit, as you call it, or inner being. On one hand, you talk about it in a kind of Baloma sense, you know, Dala, Baloma, blood, that sort of thing, the way I
mm-hmm.
talk about this inner business. And then you talk about Megawa affecting the inner being. And you also talk about sexuality somehow affecting the inner being. Now, could you just see
yes,
the
well
thing with Megawa?
Yeah.
With Megawa, my thought was that Megawa affected the way you think about things. Megawa affected, which has nothing to do with the sense of Dala. I mean, that's your identity only.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I never got any sense of kind of a spirituality about it in that sense.
Okay.
I mean, that's identity. A cosmological identity, but not spirituality. And then also, I had this notion that sex is one thing, you see, and reproduction is something else.
But it is.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how you're
okay.
sort of reading.
I had some trouble with this. Katawagas kept shifting terms on me when we discussed it. In the first place, Katawagas would not ever present, or did not ever present a picture of the inner world, which is called Vala. You go through the Vala and Tuma, you go inside the house. It's the same.
You interpret.
You know, you go in the Vala and Tuma, right? Just like you go in the Vala in Katawaga. Right?
What,
and the outer world is
Vala.
Vala.
House.
Yeah, you go inside. Alright. That inside Vala, that is the big one underneath the ground, they would not discuss Dala. They basically said there that Dala, who knows? And they always then use Dala itself to refer to the fact that the substance of your body, which could contain various kinds of inner words that could be detached from the Loma, that this substance was of a certain content. So that if we all ate the same things historically, always, and never made any mistakes, we would all have the same Dala. Our bodily content would be the same. Now, if one of us made a mistake, we'd lose it, and our Dala would change, as had happened in many instances, many times. Now, whether or not the Baloma in the inner world had this doesn't much matter. What matters is that some of them brought up with them some particularly forceful word combinations that they could contain inside a physical body, and other people can't contain them. And that was, you know, so they kind of didn't speculate along this. Then what they talked about was basically that the Baloma in the inner world were both possessed force and were force. And this I had a lot of difficulty with, because in some instances the force becomes detached and in some it doesn't. The more feminine the force, the less it is detached, which is something that you have. That it and the Baloma, it just stays together. And she has this kind of in the monocausal. With men, it's very detached. They have to keep swallowing it and associating it back to them for moments. And this became quite confusing. So I really can't answer it real well.
Mm-hmm.
Just,
you
know.
Do you give the terms of force here? And things like that. You say Baloma is possessed force.
No,
what
basically,
is
they
did.
I'm calling it force. This is like you're calling, how do you
think
it with the one?
Peril.
Yeah.
Peril.
It was parallel.
Basic,
it was
human form.
It was like you had, it was motion. You know, the ability to move things. And people talked a lot about the fact.
What I'm trying to get is, what is the native concept here that you're summarizing?
Basically, they talked using all different kinds of words for motion and pulling and turning. Which is, it was just
so Paloma possessed the power to command, to pull, which is your pulling concept, right?
Well, they may or may not possess more or less power to do it, but that's what they do. I mean, you know, any given book, the life in the inner world is all each Paloma pulling as hard as he can, just all the time, pulling. So they're all doing that.
You shouldn't be talking about pulling.
Sounds like
pulling here. Okay. That's the important thing. If it's pulling, then that ties with what you're saying. When you talk about force, it looks like a different concept.
Okay. They're all going, gimme. It's the gimme.
What if I could interject that remark? It's commonly believed, I think, after reading the Bologna paper, that Tuma is the land of the spirits, and the spirits enter into the land and remain there. In fact, where the spirits live is the people conceptualize the world on which they live as having two levels, the level which is earth, and underneath it is rock, and it's very literal because you run into it in gardening quite a lot. And the Balaman, in fact, inhabit the firm, rigid, under surface of the whole earth, not just Tuma, that's simply where they enter. They are, in fact, in the coral, everywhere that the coral is. I discovered this in 73 when there was oil drilling going on out in the Trobriand Lagoon, and there was a wave of anxiety that went through Kiriwina, and I naturally inquired about it, and the answer was they're drilling down into where the Baloma are, and Topireta and the other spirits are going to be extremely angry, and there's likely to be some kind of consequence from this, or we'll all die, we'll be an earthquake or something like that. And I inquired and said, well, they're not in Tuma, they're here, and they said, well, you know, they're spirits are everywhere that the rock is. And the earth is what mediates, in effect, between the zone above the firm surface where we live and below. In fact, the earth turns things into people, and it's people that come through the earth and are turned into people, and you put seeds in the earth and they turn into big yams and the like. And that's the concept of Kili, of regenerating things in the intermediary zone between the firm undersurface. So you get the rock undersurface, which is absolutely stable, which has incorporeal beings in it, and the reverse on the earth, on the surface, where there's nothing that's physical and tangible, you get corporeal beings like that, and it's the earth between that mediates.
Is that Baloma that stays? Because I didn't get this kind of thing at all. I mean, I got the Baloma were sometimes around, but they were around for various reasons, and it was like purposeful, and that always they went back to Tuma, and then they came back. So that if you dreamed about someone who died, the Baloma was around that night. And also when you use magic and you called names of Baloma to come, like for yams, to come into the idea is that they would come into the ground, and they would come out of the ground and help with the growth, but that they would then later go on their canoes and go back to Tuma. So it's a bit of a different thing, and I think a lot of these things are.
Maybe a different data there, but
yeah.
I think Tuma regarded as the main entrance and exit point.
Data.
And yet anywhere the coral appears on the surface, the Baloma are potentially there. So whenever you've got coral out where big trees grow, coral rock in the sea, that's the point where the Baloma can interact with the surface. Yeah.
They could be saying all these things at the same time.
That's what I'm saying.
Because in Tuma, they live underground. I mean, Tuma, human beings live above it on the ground, but these Baloma live under the ground, Tuma too.
Yes.
I mean, and they merge, and then, of course, Milamala Festival, they come across the sea
and canoes
and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's no contradiction. I mean, they can say the same all things and not contradict themselves in an essential way.
I didn't mean to inquire that, that there was a right or wrong. I think really that in all these things, which is I think one of the problems in a sense, Malinowski, remember, collected certain ideas about Baloma, then Stocking just published a letter from Billy Hancock saying, well, I asked these women, they didn't quite agree with you. I think, the whole concept of Baloma, by its very nature, as this cosmological thing, there's a kind of vagueness about it because Baloma at a moment becomes your personal power, and it enters into your dream, and of its necessity there has to be various you know, ideas. It's not a rigid cosmology. It's not like, you know, the Catholic Church,
yeah,
which establishes this is the story and you must believe it. Also, I think there are different ideas in different geographical locations. You, Kaibol is near the coast, Kaibol is inland. It's very different, you know, more mission influence. So I think we have to sort of generate these ideas as part of the same body of data.
I just like to make a brief comment. There are quite Bologna in the south where I work, it's very sort of elaborately worked out with spirit villages, you know, in various places that have been closed because of population density and things like that, too many people going there, you know, so another place has to be open and such. If anybody wants to talk about it in the extra session, you know, if they're happy to, and I have to.
Yes, Debbie's got a paper on Bologna.
Didn't hear you say that you were going to direct the discussion into trade.
Trading in Seoul.
I'll get to this real fast, okay? I said I was going to be fast. I know I will here. Alright, so what happened? So anyway, there's been a contrast to God and Donald. Then they managed to work God into actual... but one way I would know it should be paid attention to the next commented on, the next commented on before, and that is the strong interdigitation of patrilinear and masculine continuity with continuity through women, particularly masculine in public, is very important in Karawaga. And this whole idea of Tama having Karawaga over where his sons reside and who they garden for, the idea of the Tolivano having Karawaga over all the people who live in the Vano, and Yavara being Tole Karewaga, that is owning Karewaga itself, really did make it quite easy for Karewagans to stick God on top of the hierarchy. The missionaries did very nicely, especially since also they tended to use the kinds of words that Karewagans find suitable for the transformation of the inner world, like they talked about God and his voila, you know, and they talked about all these sorts of concepts that Karewagans can very easily pack on. And they did. They then approached the government to start trying to transform some of these strains of Yavar into actual concrete material wealth. And because there seemed to be, in their eyes, two important aspects of the Tolivano. One is that, of course, he's coordinating the Vano who produces material wealth. And the other is that he has punitive powers, which, of course, are his inner strengths that help in the inner model of the Wala. That actually helped keep people tied to him. And Karawaga managed at long length to get both of these off the government. It took a very long time to do this, particularly to get punitive ability off the government. By the time I was there, he had it. He could go to court with impunity, and he indeed went around to other villages and listened to court cases outside of the government court, solely on the grounds that if he took it in to the magistrate, he'd win. And as far as I could understand, certainly from Yanni Wells, he would have. I mean, I don't know about the magistrate after him, who I wasn't so knowledgeable about things trophy. I don't know if he would have known him to the Karawaga. But certainly Wells would have. And certainly this was a switch from as late as the early 60s, when after they fought their formal war with Coma, Coma took him to court and had several people sent to jail for murder.